Good evening, sir. Thank you.
Hey, yeah, evening. How you doing?
Good, how are you? A
Good.
lot going on.
Tell me about it, man.
Well,
Oh,
the
never a dull moment.
Ooh, the boxes are filling up.
Hey, how you doing, Jeffrey?
Fantastic, Mayuki. How are you?
Doing well. Not that I'm ignoring you all, but he's a guest.
I understand. Welcome, guests.
And then
Thanks. I'm
that's
re recuperating from food poisoning, so I shouldn't say I'm fantastic.
Oh no.
Yeah, I went to a restaurant on Sunday, and I'm doing a lot better now, out of the bed and everything. And
Oh my goodness.
I didn't want to cancel on you at the last minute, so I said, let me get on here.
Oh, thank you so much, Jeffrey. I'll introduce it to everybody in a second, okay? Because
Okay.
I think there's only a couple more people waiting for. This is a very good committee. Most people come close to on time or close on time. Hey,
Yeah, so
Tom,
wait
my
me
cousin
between
Robert
you.
and my brother.
Hey. I think we have quorum now, but I'll give it like 2 minutes and then we'll jump in.
Does Eileen not do this anymore? Or was that Addie? Is that for that? Oh, that's finance.
Was
Finance.
Addie. Yeah. Eileen helps behind the scenes, but she's busy on Wednesdays.
Okay, so she does finance committee then.
Yeah.
Okay. Dennis is the chair. This is Steve. Oh, I can't point to you all. That's Steve who just raised his hand. That's
Yeah.
the woman. And that's Jeffrey Banks
Okay.
who had food poisoning.
Good
And that's Verna Avery Brown. Oh my gosh, she had a masterful, I said it was a masterful interview this morning. She talked to a whistleblower.
Yeah, I
It was
heard.
yeah, well you heard, it was incredible. I thought it was so well done. Sets a great example for everybody.
Yep.
Thank you all. Thank you. Thank you very much.
Verna, how are you?
I'm doing well. Thank you. How are you? He has food poisoning.
Yeah, I'm hanging in there.
Food poisoning.
Yeah,
Oh,
I'm getting
wow.
better.
Where did you eat? I'll make sure
Well, I
I.
don't want to dog them out because I've been going there for years and
Uh-oh. Sounds
yeah.
like Ben's chili bowl.
No, it wasn't that.
Who said that? Who said that? No, don't say that. They're our friends.
I'm just teasing.
They gave us food for
Picnic.
the Jazz and
Yeah.
Justice Fest.
I
They were
hope
on
it
the
wasn't.
air yesterday and
No,
Monday.
I was
Hope it
not
wasn't
there.
E. Hope it wasn't E Life.
No.
Life.
Nope. Come on, y'all. Leave it alone. I mean,
So
I need
what
to
did you
talk to
eat?
him.
How about what did you eat? Let's go with that. We can
Some
avoid.
branzino fish.
Really?
Ah, ooh, Lord. Ooh, I love branzino.
I love branzino too. I love
And I
it.
guess that's what it was because I only had rice and spinach with it.
Could have been the spinach. If they didn't wash the spinach right, it could be spinach. But if the fish was cold, it could be the fish too, so.
Yeah, E. coli or something. I didn't even think about that.
Yeah, spinach. Yep. But then that would be outbreak because you wouldn't have been the only one. Do you know what I mean? It was E. coli, so.
Yeah, because my wife, she ordered, a waffle or something. Something she had wasn't fish, and she was okay.
Yeah. So, well, I'm glad you're fine.
So today's the first day I've had some soup. I've been eating some watermelon every day
Very good.
to just flush my system.
Very
There
good.
you go.
I could have a steady diet of watermelon. That's really good. I love watermelon. This best time of year too. Come on, I
You
just
get one
realized that
too.
was you in the dark. You're the only one
Yeah,
in the
that's him in
dark.
the dark. Okay,
Is he there?
I'm gonna call the meeting to order. I think we're already recording, right?
Yes, it was saying
Okay,
recording.
so it's a good thing you didn't name the restaurant since we're recording. This is the August 6th meeting of the WPFW Relocation Committee meeting. Dennis Williams chairing. calling us to order at 7:35 p.m. And I'm going to call the roll in no particular order. Miyuki Williams.
Present.
Is here. Kamau Harris.
I'm here.
Tom Chase.
Here.
Verna Avery Brown.
Present.
Your hair looks pretty.
Robert Hendricks Gordon.
Available.
And I do not see Mo Thomas.
Oh, let me remind him. Oh, he's getting clams in Maine or something.
Okay.
Yummy.
And Frenchie is sick.
Vanessa is not here, right? Vanessa Dixon Briggs.
Nope.
Ron Pinchback.
Nope.
Or Wayne Bruce.
No.
Okay.
Three strikes.
One, two, three. Actually, we only have five.
Do we need over quorum?
Well, we need one more to conduct business, but we don't need a quorum to have a good conversation. So why don't you introduce your guests, Miyuki?
Our guests, not just my guests, our guests. We're talking about, getting a space or something.
Invited, yes.
And, I wanted to, we talked about buying or what are we going to do, rent, all those kind of things. I thought it'd be really great.
I'm sorry, excuse me. I just want to recognize, Craig Williams, who's not an official member of the committee, but he's a loyal sort of member of the committee.
He's your cousin too. He's my brother. So he's your cousin too. Yeah. Right. And and he's an architect.
Yeah.
So I'm very thrilled to, bring to our meeting. Thank you. Some expertise in what our endeavor is. Jeffrey Bank is not only a banker. He's our banker. He runs things over at Industrial Bank and he's our contact there. I saw him for the first time in a long time and he said, Miyuki, why do you have all your money in those big corporate other banks? I said, I don't know. He said, you should be a community bank. I said, okay. So I took money over there. We had some money there. And then, most of it's still in Truist because Otis's system, with the tally and everything, it's too hard to try to untangle that and make something new and authorize that. So right now we're still at Truist. And, he's very kind. He's worked with us for a lot. He's the one who got the, art commissioned, of Askia Muhammad as well as Dory Ladner. And he's doing other people of WPFW's history. And when we were going to UDC, the walls all have all these different things that he told me that after I knew we weren't moving there, then I hadn't had the heart to tell him, no, not on those walls. But he's a UDC person too, so he loves and appreciate them. Steve Coleman was our partner in our Jazz and Justice Festival. As you may or may not know, WPFW's EIN number is tied to Pacifica in California. So therefore, we cannot qualify for anything from DC Commission of the Arts. There's some things we can qualify for, but the other thing is when we were doing that Jazz and Justice Fest, we were working so quickly because we could have used the Programmers Association one. But Steve has been around for over 30 years, working in the community, making community, enhancing community. So he has a track record, and we thought it'd be more likely of us being awarded the grant if we had that kind of history and applying for the grant rather than Programmers Association or even WPFW by itself. We did it. He felt, he did it, and we did very well. We got the grant, and we were able to do the Jazz and Justice Festival. So
thank you.
And the story I wanted to share about him, though, he is with the Josephine Butler Center. That's got a very long history. It's got a very long history. Shoot. Sorry. It's got a very long history. And I wanted him to share with that because we talked about what are other means of us securing a building. And so I don't know if we can quite go the route he did, but it's just an idea that, things that we can do. And also he's very well. He's in the community, so he knows a lot of different people, players in the community and things like that. When we were having trouble at Pepco, Mo said, get someone at Pepco to help push this thing forward. I said, I don't know anybody at Pepco. I don't know anyone in government. I called Steve because the first it was government. I said, Steve, do you know anyone in this department? He said, he got back with me in 2 minutes. And then we were supposed to get an inspection on Thursday the 10th. I got back. Well, they'll come tomorrow, the 3rd. I didn't have anything to say because I couldn't get an engineer over there to meet him there. So we had to do it later on the Monday. But the thing is, he accelerated the whole thing by a week. And you know, every day we were not broadcasting full power is driving me nuts. So he shared that person unconditionally. They were so gracious and nice to me. They got us taken care of Monday instead of that, you know, the following, Thursday. But, anyway, so that's why I asked him to be here too, because he may be able to, you know, tell us or help us. I mean, that was huge for us, you know, when we were dealing with Pepco and not having that building thing. So thank you very much, Steve. Thank you very much, Jeffrey, for being here. Jeffrey, and then you all don't have to stay for everything, but, you know, Jeffrey, if you go first, and then Steve, if you could go.
And just a moment before you begin, I just want to state for the record that member Vanessa Dixon Briggs has joined us, and she left a note that she has to leave a little bit early, and our friend Robert Frazier is also in the room. All right, Yay. Gentlemen. So whichever of you would like to share your wisdom first, we are all ears.
Okay, I'll go first if that's okay, Steve.
Yep, so you can go lie down. Have some more water.
Yes, I do. Yeah.
That's it, 'cause he's sick. Okay.
So, again, my name is Jeffrey Banks. I'm the senior vice president of Industrial Bank.
I should have said that too when I talked about it. Sorry.
Yeah, I've been in the banking field since 1977. I've been in this market. I'm originally from Cincinnati. I've been in DC for 37 years. I worked at Industrial Bank when I left Cincinnati to come here. And then after working there, I worked with a group of people and we started what was known as the Bank of Georgetown. And then we ended up selling Bank of Georgetown to United Bank. And I was about to retire and Doyle Mitchell asked me to come back and work with him for a few more years. So I said, well, I'll go ahead and do that and help out the community bank before I make that retirement. Full disclosure, I sat in your seats 31 years ago. I was a WPFW board member. And I think, Verna, you're probably the only one that goes back on the board, you know, dealing with us in those crazy days.
You're muted, Verna.
And when I was looking at the name Hendricks, I said, man, that brother, I was thinking that was the guy that lived over there off of U Street that did all this, the jazz stuff. But yeah, I've been around. I've been a supporter. I think you mentioned that me and my wife are in the major supporter category. Right. Yeah. Circle. I've been affiliated with the station for about 37 years. Yeah. Ever since I've been here, my cousin was the former general manager of the radio station, Leon Collins. My homeboy, Tom Porter was there. We had a lot of different activities, a lot of different personalities, and I worked with a lot of the people in the community. And a little bit about Industrial Bank. We are about one of the top five largest black-owned institutions in the country. We have offices in D.C., Maryland, Newark, New Jersey, and New York City. We do all type of commercial real estate loans. Our lending capacity is about $20 million. If it's something larger, I have other community banks. We're part of the National Bankers Association. I can use other banks in other cities to participate with us. But our sweet spot is for loans that are like under $10 million. But we do a lot as a community bank. We have a program where we're in the jails with the ex-offenders. We're making sure that they get financial education. So when they come out, they'll be able to come out and pay child support, get jobs and that kind of stuff and things that the other community banks are not really willing to do. For D.C., I chair the D.C. Financial Literacy Council for the mayor and for the D.C. Council. We have over 20 nonprofit financial education stakeholders. We just had our wealth summit at the Martin Luther King Library last week to discuss the impacts of the new stadium, the $3.7 billion development. And with just talking about some of the black developers or the black hotels and the other people that are involved, and how we can continue to navigate that now that it's going to happen. My wife is Stacy Lee Banks. She owns Lee's Flower and Card Shop down on U Street. The flower shop has been in existence. It's celebrating its 80th year. This year started in 1945. You mentioned the Arts Commission. She was the vice chair of the Arts Commission until she stepped down recently. And I was going to ask, you know, have you gone out and tried to get support from them? I'm glad that you've worked around it and was able to get it done. I've done a lot of things. You know, I was on the national board of the Association for the Study of African American Life and History. Just stepped down from that job, and I had oversight for our national convention. We're setting up freedom schools to teach Black history in Florida. And we're about to have our conference down in Atlanta. I'm on the board of Prince George's County Chamber and involved in about 8 different boards around the city. Work with a lot of different people, a lot of different developers in the city, trying to focus on wealth, education, and development in the community. So when Mayuki agreed to come on board and let us do some banking with her, I was just really pleased because we always had a problem making it happen with the people out in Berkeley back in the day. And they always wanted to get their hands on the monies when we had major donors that give up a couple of $100,000, $250,000. They felt that that money was theirs, and it was always a tug of war. Me as the banker back then trying to make sure that the local Pacifica kept the money and it didn't go out. Money was designated for D.C. and didn't go out. So, you know, I've been committed to WPFW. I'm elated to share some information with you. I had asked some questions about the building, the location, and I understand that you don't have a location. But I wanted to just go right in and say, like, what we normally look at on a commercial real estate deal for a nonprofit, we'll do a loan to value of like 75% to 80%. So if the building costs $1 million, you would have to come to the table with like 20%. If it's an 80% loan to value, have a down payment of $200,000 or could be $250,000, depending on just using easy round numbers like that. We working with a nonprofit, we can do what's known as a debt to income ratio of 1.05%, which is very narrow because normally with businesses, we require them to have 1.25%. What does that say? What am I talking about? Mumble jumble, just plain talk. If you have debt of $100,000, you should have income of $105,000. To cover your debt, including the principal interest payments and all of your current expenses. Okay. So that's a plus for nonprofits. We look at your 990s that you, file for 3 years. We look at that. If the loan is under $1.5 million, we, normally, can take your CPA compiled, statements. If it's like, $1.5 to $3 million, we'll get your CPA reviewed statements. And if the loan is over $3 million, then we would require audited statements. So what I did is just came up with some plain figures. I haven't seen anything. I haven't had a chance to go online to look at your 990 filings, but I just put some numbers out there. If you find a building, it costs $1 million or more. I'm just saying if you finance $1 million, and I'm just throwing an interest rate of like 7.25%. I'm not saying that's what the rate would be, but I'm just saying just throwing it out there at 7.25%, on 20 years on $1 million, then that would be a payment of $7,926, about $8,000 a month for the principal and interest. So whatever your monthly expenses are, you would add that payment amount to your monthly expenses and then look at how much, because I think you guys are already paying a lot of money for rent, $30,000 or something. Well, that's what I think you were paying before or something. I think I heard that during one of the drives.
No, we were paying, it never got that high. We started off at 1990 at about 8,000, I believe. But by the time we left, it was near 19,000 a month.
Yeah, I think it was something
like that. We never got quite to 30. And right now we have a small studio and an office in a building that we're renting. It was more cost effective to make that studio our studio than try to build a studio somewhere else, because it's already soundproof and saved us a lot of money by, you know, going in a professional studio that was already there and then just enhancing it with what we needed.
Okay, so just keep that in mind. On $1 million, if the rate was 7.25%, you would have on a 20-year amortization, you have a payment of about $8,000 a month. If you go to $2 million for 20 years, at 7.25%, your payments would be about $15,910.74. So say close to $16,000. And then if you did a $3 million loan, pardon me, my dogs are excited because my wife's coming home, so barking in the background. So with $3 million, the payments would be 23.8, so just round it up to about $24,000 a month. Mm-hmm. Now, what we would be doing is looking at all of the streams of income, how you're able to manage the expenses, and in our investigation. We would do this loan, we would amortize it as a 20-year note, but we would reset the rates after 5 years at whatever the rates are at that time. And you find that the banks will do this to hedge on inflation and the cost of money going up. Mm-hmm. They normally don't want to give you a 20-year fix like a residential mortgage. Mm-hmm. Normally there's a prepayment penalty. If you, pay the banks off early and you are paying it by refinancing with someone else, the banks normally want a penalty of like a 5, 4, 3, 2, 1%. 5% in the first year, second year, 4%. All this is negotiable, and, you have my word that I will fight for the best terms for my station. We normally have a 1% origination fee, so that would be like about a $10,000. We collect half of that up front. If you decide to go with us, that's great. If you decide not to, and we've given you the terms and a commitment, and you say, well, no, we don't want to go with you, we want to pick somebody else, then we would be able to keep the fee. Hold on for a minute. Hold on just.
I'm going to forward a video to everyone, too, that you can look at later on that Steve has about the Josephine Butler Center, just showing you what it looks like. It's very beautiful, but I'll send it to you after the meeting.
Yeah, it's a great-looking place.
Okay, so, yeah, that's just about it. We it would take probably 60 to 90 days based on our pipeline of a lot of deals that are happening to get it done, so... If you find something and you're interested in it, I would suggest that you go ahead and let us get to work on it as soon as possible. We don't necessarily have to collect a fee for the appraisal of the property up front. until we get to a point where you're ready to move forward with it. But at least to get to a preliminary so we know, you know, what you qualify for so that you can go in as a strong buyer. One of the things is, I'll have to check and see, but the city has, DC has over $3 billion cash at Goldman Sachs. We're one of the richest jurisdictions in the land. And that's why Donald Trump wants to take this thing over and, be in control of the development of $3.7 billion plus all the billions that are going to be developed on a 180-acre site. And he knows that we have $3 billion in cash where most states, most jurisdictions are running a deficit. And D.C. has had a commercial real estate acquisition fund that I've been able to use for Black businesses and local businesses, whereas they have a grant up to $750,000. Now, at the last time I talked with them last week, I'm not sure if they've opened it up for nonprofits. It was normally for businesses in D.C. And so I had a brother that had a building he bought in Georgetown. We got him to $750,000. And then we got him another $300,000 grant from the city. And after that, we were able to get him a $1 million loan for 2% with the district. And with our rate, it was just a blended rate and it reduced the amount that he had to pay. So he's sitting on about $3 million in equity on that property. So I would suggest that you look at all these different options out there. Truist or whoever you're talking, other banks that you're talking to, make sure that they're looking at other options for you. And they're really on the ground working for you to bring these other opportunities to you.
Okay. Because, hold on. I see a question here for you.
Yes.
I didn't want to interrupt him, Dennis. I just wanted to say hello. I used to represent Industrial Bank back before I got on the bankruptcy court. So I just wanted to say thank you for coming personally. And for you to say hi to my friends over there, Patricia and Doyle and John Gamble, if he's still there. I believe he's still there. I'm not sure.
John, Albuquerque, New Mexico, John.
Exactly. Is Roy Moss still there?
No, Roy, I haven't talked to Roy. Okay. But on my first run, Roy, you know, we worked together. He did a lot of the small business lending.
Right. I didn't want to get in your way. I was waiting.
But your name is Robert Hendricks, right?
Robert Gordon.
John Hendricks. Who loves Hendricks?
Jimi Hendricks.
Oh, yeah. Sorry. I realized after I said it.
Yeah.
Didn't mean to confuse you.
Yeah,
but
I confused you.
Wait a minute. You don't look like the Robert Hendricks that I knew.
Right. I think I know who you're talking about.
Yeah,
that is not me. I represented Industrial for about 10, 12 years before I went on the bankruptcy court. So if you get back, just let the folks know that, you know, I'm over here. Another friend, you know, on the board. So to the extent it matters.
While we have a pause, let me get a couple of other questions in here, if you don't mind, Jeff. Verna and then Craig.
Yes. Hello, Jeffrey. It's great to see you back in the fold. You know, as you well know, WPFW and Pacifica have a pretty sketchy credit history. How would that impact our ability to get a loan?
Well, we would have to look at what's been happening in the last 3 years. Is it recovering? Is it on an uptick? What's the story behind it? When we look at the statements, is there anything that we can depreciate and go back? It's a nonprofit. We don't expect nonprofits to have a large, profit every year. But is it solvent? Will it be able to meet its debts? And by having such a low bar at 105 ratio, meaning that if you have $100,000 worth of debts, you have $105,000 worth of income. we can push that. And, I will fight for it. I just need to know where it is. What is the plan? What is the recovery plan with you acquiring your own space? How much is this going to save you? Mm-hmm. How are you going to be able to, this is hopefully is going to allow you to afford off, your rents going from 8,000 to 19,000. And what is the story?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, Doyle listens to the station, Mitchell. I'm not sure about Patricia, but a lot of us are involved, listening to the station. We love the station. We love the freedom of the station. And, with this political climate, we want to make sure that whoever you're dealing with, they're not frightened of your stance of our radio station being independent, because bankers are normally conservative and they don't want any heat, any smoke or whatever. When I was on the board, we had a brother, Jesse McDavid, the Spear. You know, that we always had the people trying to shut the station down. we had a lot. And so, sometimes the bankers get scared and they were like, well, we can't say we can't do it for this reason. Let's find another reason, because we don't want somebody to get pissed off at the bank because we're over there.
Right.
Maybe, you know, they talking too much about the babies being killed and the genocide, you know, and we don't want to offend people.
Right.
And they take these political stance. We won't have those issues at Industrial. I guarantee you that we will not, bow down like that, because we need independent voices with the attack on public radio and, the defunding and all the other madness that's going on. We're in a real fight right about now.
Okay. Good Thank answer. You. Thank you. Craig and then Miyuki.
Okay. So I have three questions that are slightly complex. So we don't need a total answer right now, but kind of food for thought, and maybe you can get back to us.
Okay.
One is, because we don't necessarily trust Pacifica, and we wouldn't want to buy a building and then have them sell it off from us, because we are they. We may have to set up a separate nonprofit, some sort of holding company, some sort of friends of whatever, to purchase any building. And we, you know, so we may not even have 3 years of 999s or 990s or whatever they are by the time we get around doing this.
Well, you do have a legacy. And I'm going to tell you, there was a lady, Summer Reese. She's not still there, right?
No.
Okay. I mean, we've had some characters out there in California.
Absolutely. Before I forget, I am the liaison for the Jazz and Justice Circle, and I recognize your name and your wife's name. So thank you, and thank you again.
Okay. What's the second question? I'll have to go back to confirm.
Okay.
But it would make sense to protect yourself, because, I haven't been involved, but know what's happening in New York and other places, Houston and mm-hmm. LA. But all the stations seem like they have some issues, territorial issues. And one of the things I forgot to mention is that we would definitely need to have the resolution that states that you're able to borrow money. So it would make sense for you to have your own entity so that you can have the freedom, autonomy, and not have to rely on them signing off whether or not you can do the loan.
Yeah, I mean, I think there's ways we can create that entity. What we can't do is, you know, the license and that entity will be separate. The license is held by Pacifica. So, whatever. The second question is, you know, we may be in a situation where we need to rent something, but may still be facing, you know, $200,000 to $400,000 of build out, depending upon what we, rent is industrial in a position to help finance a build out of a rental property.
Yeah, we do the SBA 7As. We have a third party that does that. What happens on that end, we would really need to look at the specific deal, look at the financials, and look what makes sense before we have our third party consultant that handles our 7As to go ahead. But that's a great opportunity because there is money for build out. Mm-hmm. As long as you are, I think it's 80% occupancy, then that should be okay. But let me just check to confirm with my underwriter. I couldn't get one of my underwriters on tonight, but I'll check and see, what's the latest.
By that, you mean that we would be occupying 80% of whatever space that we're we're working on?
Exactly. Okay. It's not like you're trying to do a commercial real estate transaction and become a landlord.
Right.
Yeah.
It's like a primary residence kind of thing.
Exactly.
Yeah. Okay.
And the last question, which really is, I think, for later, do you feel qualified, or could you recommend somebody, if you don't, who could simply advise this committee on the pros and cons of buying versus renting for a nonprofit?
Yeah, I know a few people. Let me just check on them to make sure, because sometimes people, you know, have some issues and mm-hmm. you don't know about it. And I hate to refer somebody and they've had some issues that I didn't know about.
Yep.
But, okay. I would say, just to safeguard your home and your stability and not be paying triple net everybody's taxes, everybody else's utilities and all the other things and their profit to try to control your destiny. Is that's why I think my gut feeling is it best to own it. Because mm-hmm. you're going to be around, you're not looking to roll out. You know, you've been out there for 48, 50 years, and it's not like this is a short-term play. But those are great questions.
And okay, thank you. And okay. Thanks again for your support of the station.
Okay, yes. Yeah. And you're Tom?
Craig Williams.
Craig, I've heard the name before. Okay.
Thursday mornings.
Yeah. Right. That's what it is. Cause I wake up at 5 o'clock, 7 days a week. The WPFW clock radio wakes me up at 5 a.m.
Tomorrow morning, it won't be the clock. It'll be the Craig.
Okay. So, Mayuki, yeah. I will have to, respond to you and you get to Craig cause I don't have his, email. So no you problem. Can respond.
That's fine.
I'll take care of that. And also,
I have one more question here. Go ahead.
I apologize for not being clear. We are nowhere near the position of moving one way or another. This is a discussion. We're trying to figure out what our options are, what is possible and what is not. So I wanted you as a banker to give some of the stats that you shared so that we know what it is. We'd have to start, you know, if we're going to get a down payment, we know now we have to have at least $200,000 or $100,000 down payment and $100,000 for improvement or something if we went the straight, just singular bank way. So you said, you know, we're not talking to any other banks or anything else. This is just very preliminary. I appreciate you taking time.
Okay. All right. Well, that's smart to get started now so that you can have a goal to raise money.
Mm-hmm.
There are a lot of people that are very wealthy that are coming to D.C. to make some money. I can't mention their names, but you guys know them. They're coming to town and they're building. And we need to get in touch with them to support. They know that they need to support nonprofits, but something with a 50-year legacy, you really need to be in front of these people once they've been selected to do some of these deals. What is the community benefit? We don't need a little rec center somewhere. We need funding for the Pacifica Foundation, local station. WPFW, put it that way, not Pacifica.
Yep.
You said you had another question?
No, that was it. Muki had something.
Yeah, that was it. That's all I wanted to say. So go take care of yourself, okay?
Feel better. Thank you so much.
All right. Thank you for having me.
Absolutely. Thank you so much.
See you guys later. Bye.
Thank you. Steve, thanks for your patience.
Yeah.
Do you have the floor? Let's,
okay. I'm sorry that my last name isn't Williams. It seems like that's part of the requirement. But my middle name is William. Does that help?
Yes, it sure is.
Oh, okay, good.
That makes you a second cousin once removed.
Very good. So yeah, thank you. It's really an honor to be here. I'm a longtime fan of PFW. PFW has played a ongoing role in the evolution of the organization I lead, which is called Washington Parks and People. We got started in Malcolm X Park 35 years ago when DC was the murder capital and the murder center was right behind there on University Place back in 89-90, when we had more folks killed on the streets of DC in that one year than all U.S. combat fatalities worldwide in the preceding decade. And we were started as a crime patrol, just trying to stop the killing, you know, the orange hats, saying hello, not having anything that looked like a weapon, you know, trying to use what we learned from the African-American elders who taught us is the most powerful force on earth, which is community. We started going in the park 9 days after this teen on my block was killed on Dr. King's birthday and died in my housemate's arms as she tried to save his life. She was an emergency room physician. And back then people said, Malcolm X is a great park, don't ever go there. You know, they go for like the festival, African Liberation Day, but day to day, it would just be like, no, don't go there. And so when we started patrolling it at night, people thought we were nuts. But we'd learned that there was a way to stand up for community, and it didn't involve going inside, which is what the police told us to do. So I won't bore you with 35 years of this work, but it's been an amazing journey. And one in which it's like a continuing revelation of the power of community. I would say both when the human community and the natural community come together. Meridian Hill is an ancient sacred ground of the Nacotchtank and Piscataway nations. And there's a lot of power there. All of you who are at the Jazz and Justice Fest or, you know, any drum circle going back, over 50 years, you know what I'm talking about. And the reason I'm here is I just wanted to share a little bit about how we ended up from being a scruffy little community group that was a crime patrol and just trying to stop killing and clean up the park and, you know, try to make some positive places for our kids to gather, ended up owning what is now a multi-million dollar building and did that without any kind of credit card or even credit rating, or, you know, big, like, corporate donor or millionaire or billionaire. What happened was we'd always had free office space down, like, behind the garbage bins and basement of apartment building type thing. Started in my living room. And eventually we were outgrowing that, and we didn't want to waste money on rent. And we heard that this building sitting on 15th Street that was, like, this, like, falling apart, used to be the Hungarian embassy and the Brazilian embassy, but hadn't ever been accessible to the community, really, was falling apart physically. It was being vandalized. It was surrounded by barbed wire. It was heading toward foreclosure. It was falling apart financially. And we got in touch with the owners. We said, hey, we're looking for some office space. Is there any? And the owners said, well, if you help stop the vandalism, we'll let you go in there as long as you don't turn up the heat. We won't charge you anything. So we wore our coats and you know, everything that could go bump in the night did, and it went bump in the day too. It's this 40 room, 18,000 square foot, 98-year-old Renaissance Revival mansion that was originally built to be on spec to be the home of the vice president, which never happened. So we're in there rent-free, keeping the vandalism at bay, just the same kind of stuff we did in Malcolm X Park across the street, just standing up for community. And we got this wacky idea, you know, what if we were to like take this thing over, make this a place for community for all time? There was some like gentleman's club from London that was trying to get it, and India was trying to get the building, but there was unrest on the border of Pakistan, which helped us. So when we went in to meet with the bank, we were kind of shocked that they didn't laugh us out of their offices, because this was not like industrial or city first. This was, you know, SunTrust and Nation, you know, the not friendly banks.
Yeah.
But we realized that we had something that they needed, because they were heading toward foreclosure and doing a community reinvestment act, like a financing that would score points for them on CRA. Would be a real feather in their cap, and to convert a foreclosure into a performing asset could be something really good. And we asked if we could take over the debt, and they said, no, we didn't have enough money to qualify to take over the existing debt. We didn't really have much to show of anything. But they were still talking to us because we were there. We were in the room, and everybody else had pretty much written off that whole part of town at that time.
Mm-hmm.
And or at least everybody else in their world, you know, the community hadn't written it off.
Mm-hmm.
And, so we started fixing up the building as we were in it without a contract to buy it. We started mobilizing this and really taking a huge risk with our volunteers of taking the same people who we had used to dramatically bring the park back to life, to reduce crime there by 99%, by standing up for the drummers and the kids, and just this amazing, amazing story that we've now told all over the world, you know, really about the power of people to reclaim space, you know, the ultimate, to me, democracy. That's why Josephine Butler got involved, because she saw as a self-determination statehood advocate this is the way you assert democracy, by saying that you have making a say in the land you call home, not just listening to the park service or whoever deciding what should happen for you, like you're a toddler or something. And we were able to do that. This, it turns out a lot of the same skill sets that we've used for 35 years in reclaiming lands all over the city for the people can be used to reclaim buildings. And now we actually own 5 properties, or we manage 5. We own 4. And we use all of them to advance our mission. The Park Center is like the jewel in that crown, because the Park Center, in addition to helping us in so many ways directly with our mission, is also a cash cow that generates an enormous amount of revenue. It's kind of wild to have this little community organization that now is permanently self-sustaining, because we have weddings there. We have, you know, all kinds of gatherings, celebrations of life. We just had a beautiful one. David Schwartz. And so, you know, we recognize that we, you know, we're stewards of the land. We're not owners of it. We're on stolen land of the Nacotchtank and the Piscataway Nations. The building literally sits on the very top of the ancient spiritual ground of Meridian Hill. Josephine's ashes are under a Virginia pine in that sacred space. And so, you know, our goal is to have the community be the owners for all time, you know, using our organization as a vehicle for that. And we take that very seriously, and also with a lot of joy. I can now or at another time get into a lot more details about the technical aspects of this. I didn't know shit, to use the technical term, about what I was doing. I went into a meeting with Debbie Heard Baptist, the president of City First Bank, and Oramenta Newsom, who was an awesome force. I don't know if you guys ever knew her, but she was an incredible hero, the head of our local office of the Local Initiative Support Corporation, which is a wonderful resource you should know about. And basically, they read me the Riot Act, these two incredible African-American women leaders, just let me know exactly how ignorant I was and exactly what things I needed to get my shit together about, you know, if I was going to be serious about actually acquiring this crazy 40-room building. And that kind of, you know, it woke me up and made me realize this could be serious if I took it seriously, if we did the things, you know, and so they were my tutors. You know, God rest their souls. Amazing, amazing people. And there were so many people who championed this, and ultimately over 60,000 volunteers poured time over the years into breathing life into this forgotten place and making it a place of real magic and community and power and dreams and justice. You know, it was stuff like eventually we were able to qualify to get the building because we were fixing up spaces. And as we fixed them up, we'd start renting them out to other nonprofits. And the banks were so desperate, they forbore on collecting the mortgage. And so while, you know, cause they needed something and they needed us to make it into a performing asset before we even owned it, and we didn't have any money. And we knew how to stretch a penny, which was about all we had. And so we were able to gradually turn it into a performing asset by having other nonprofits in the space. It's kind of the same way I bought my own house nearby using the DC tenant right of first refusal when I realized that the rents added up to more than the mortgage, you know, and, we benefited from the fact that people didn't believe in this part of town. You know, and so we were able to get a really low price and eventually to qualify. But even then the banks were like, yeah, but we're not going to be able to close unless you can put up $80,000 in escrow because you see, you've got all these broken lintels across the back of the building. And, you know, we don't know. Those are probably going to crumble at any moment. So you got to give us $80,000 to show that you're serious about fixing them. And we said, well, we don't have 80. We've got 2,000. How about if we hire, somebody skilled to show us how to do it? And we just fix the damn lintels. And we fixed the damn lintels, and the $80,000 escrow was removed with 2,000. And, you know, and we've done that kind of thing all along. I mean, they all, sometime I can regale you with tales of, you know, coming in the middle of the night when a storm had blown the skylight off the top of the roof into a tree and having to climb the fire escape with the thing and use a chair desk pad to glue onto the top of the fire, the skylight frame in order to have something to hold the elements at bay. And I'm like on top of the, on the deck of the Pequod, you know, holding the forces of nature back. But it takes a little bit of craziness to a little bit of, you know, the chutzpah, the hubris we have in the nonprofit world of thinking we can really stand up for the world as it could be and should be. And, you know, really believing that what we're doing is vital. What we're doing is pivotal in our lives and more so right now than ever, right, folks?
Yeah.
And so the idea of having a permanent home for something like PFW, you know, I mean, it's not right that we're 50 years in and there isn't one. There is one, obviously, in all of our hearts, in our communities, in our land. But how do we make that happen in real estate? And so the weird thing is that our little scruffy, you know, by the skin of our teeth project has kind of become a sort of reverse model. We didn't do it the way anybody said you're supposed to do it. And there's now like a national nonprofit centers network, and everybody there talks about how they had their 20-year plan and they had the this and the that. We didn't have any of that. What we had was a board that was willing to bet on this and willing to take a chance of failing, saying, well, it doesn't hurt to try. Let's try. Now, let me temper that by saying you do have to be crazy. There are aspects of there's an opportunity cost to owning property, and that may not be what's right for the station. You know, there's no glamour in owning as versus renting. There are all kinds of reasons to rent, but at the same time, it would be really cool if PFW could have a permanent home that you don't have to answer to anybody about. I'm a firm believer that, nonprofit shouldn't mean non-equity. You know, we all need a piece of the rock. We are not fly-by-night things. We will always need a PFW. So let's make a permanent home for it. So that's kind of my summary. I don't know if that's helpful.
Can we edit this recording and play it for the rest of the fun?
Please. Yeah. I mean, anything we can do, you know, I mean, like I say, PFW was championing the Josephine Butler Park Center when that was just a dream. We're coming on there telling them, yeah, well, we got this dream. And PFW was, you know, Gloria Minot, God bless her. She was, you know, reporting on that through thick and a lot of thin.
Right. Well, we have plenty of crazy, so there's abundance of crazy that's available for you. So we have plenty of that. Oh, Tom's got a question. Be quiet.
No karate. Tom.
Yeah, thanks, Steve. That's a really inspiring overview. I think Craig mentioned earlier, one of the options we're looking at is finding a Friends of WPFW partner that could own the asset and have a long-term lease with Pacifica.
Mm-hmm.
And you're, you know, a property owner and landlord for nonprofits. I mean, is that would you be interested in being a partner like that? I mean, would that fit in your portfolio? You don't have to commit person, like, just brainstorming here.
I mean, for us, our bottom line is our mission. And our mission is growing park-based community health, equity, and justice. So for us, it gets back to those cops telling us to go inside when people were dying in the streets, and we felt like we got to do the opposite. So it's a different mission than PFW, but it's aligned. And, you know, I just would want to be careful about mission creep for both of us. But I think there's definitely all kinds of ways that we could work together on this. And when I heard about one building that, I guess isn't available now, the one on, I guess it's 3149 16th Street. You know, it was actually designed by the same architect as our building, George Oakley Totten. And, you know, I could imagine a lot of ways that we could have helped with that one as an example. So yeah, we're open. I think it's just important to not let the tail wag the dog, you know, make sure that you stay grounded, we stay grounded, and, you know, that it all makes sense. But I would definitely consider it and explore it seriously with you guys if that seems like a good idea.
And, you know, I'm speaking for myself. We would, appreciate, you know, some form of partnership, whatever form that might take. And I'm really glad, to hear what you had to say, and glad that you came this evening. Do we have some other questions, comments? Everyone moved to silence by this inspirational
I would like to say, I mean, after Steve shared some of that story with me, I said, wow, we can do that too. And Robert was with me, and Robert was the one who told me about the other building. So we drove right to the building from leaving Steve, and it's a great building. It's 16th and Lamont. It's got a 3/4 round parking lot. Way bigger than Steve's and everything. I said, I love this building. And about 2 weeks later, Robert sent me an email. A bunch of rugrats took it away. Like they gave it to some elementary school group or something. They're going to make some kind of school out of it or something. I couldn't believe it. It's just magnificent. It would have been great for us because the parking, it could have been but it's still, like you said, it's inspiring. So just to open us up to look for trying to identify other possibilities. I mean, I don't know people. I mean, Steve, so nothing else. Steve could, you know, maybe help me talk to whoever we could talk to. There's still that Reeves building thing that's been hanging over our head as a possibility where we just get something. It wouldn't be ours, but at least it wouldn't be expensive. And we'd be,
except that it's not even built yet. So let's not.
Yeah, but it's still, I'm saying to get on the list of people to get in there. I mean, there's other options rather than just renting or just buying. I just want us to be open to that. That's all.
Yeah. Of course. You know, the Reeves Center being a D.C. government building, and who knows what's the, you know, the D.C. government could go the way of the CPB.
Federalized, right.
It is interesting, just the act of thinking about buying a building, I think could get some of the people in your orbit to think about PFW a little differently. Like, it's been surprising to me. For us, going after this building was a very selfish act at the time. Like, I was like, wow, we could be spending all this time reclaiming parks and we're reclaiming this building. And in the end, it's not selfish because we made it be this permanent thing. But it's always kind of funny to me how people treat us like more of an institution when we have a building that looks like an institution. So there are some elements of kind of raising the bar. And even for those organizations that we incubate in our space, we've had 50 nonprofits share space in the building through the years. And they say that it really helps their stature and their funding. And, you know, so there are funny ways that even though these are just gewgaws of real estate, that they actually do help with raising the stature of the good work we're all doing.
Yeah. I see, Craig is gone, but I wonder what kind of, conversations have been germinated among the Jazz and Justice Circle, around this.
I don't think it's gone that far. I mean, yeah. I don't know though. Yeah. He had to get ready his show. He's going to be at the station at 5 tomorrow.
Yeah. I'm just wondering if, you know, just sort of.
Yeah. I don't know.
Maybe I'll talk to him. Any other questions or comments? Or points of discussion, because it's been an hour. It doesn't need to be an hour and a half.
I'll just say that we didn't have any like big bank account here. We managed to get a couple foundation grants that helped us with what ended up being a tiny down payment. I'm like one of those late night TV ads here, you know, no money down. But the point is, in all this, that we have non-cash assets that are deep. And we must remember that in all the things that we do here.
Yep. Good point. Anyone else? Vanessa, I know you said you had to go. I'm glad you're able to stick around. Is there anything you'd like to say?
Maybe she just
no, Dennis, answer. Thanks for asking. I was just listening to both meetings at the same time because this was really interesting. I didn't want to miss it.
Okay. Thank you.
Steve, thank you so much for taking time and thank you for everything
else. Steve.
Absolutely. We will continue our partnership and collaborations, doing other things. He also, by the way, did the Marvin Gaye Park as well. So not only do the parks and people have a Josephine Butler Center, they're also doing a lot with Marvin Gaye, his history, his park where he used to go meditate and sing. You shared with me. I don't have the story because I mess up stories.
The reason he became the first Motown star to sing about the environment was he began those songs sitting by the Watts Branch Stream below the East Capitol dwellings where he lived at number 12 East 60th Street. And then he had his debut as a 15-year-old, his professional debut in our building. Which is the old Barnett's, club, the Crystal Room right off of, Division Avenue.
Great story.
So this is Terry. I'm a Jazz and Justice, member.
Yeah.
Hi. Thanks for, letting me participate. I also own a nonprofit, that I've had for about, 10 years or so. And all I can do is share the gutsiness and the craziness that it takes to do something that no one else is doing, mm-hmm. and to stand out and have confidence in yourself and the impact that it makes once things start snowballing and you get validation from ways that you never thought you could get. Yeah. And I heard you say that you have nonprofits that are working with you. Maybe they could be, maybe their missions would be more, sympathetic with PFW's mission.
If you're talking to me, I didn't mean, in saying what I said about mission, I didn't mean to say I don't think there's alignment. I think there's huge alignment and I'm honored to partner with PFW any way that it works. I just want to be.
Yeah.
Clear about being grounded for going into that.
And I think Terry's point is that, you know, there are some, not that they are in conflict, but there are distinct missions in that yeah. because you work with so many other nonprofits, perhaps some of their missions are more directly aligned with mm-hmm. ours than yours are. I think that was the point.
Got it.
But either way, we'll keep the door open, certainly. Thank you for that comment.
Yeah. Let us know any ways we can help. We're here and you know, we're happy to support any way we can.
Okay.
And I know this is the relocation committee, but I did mean to I see you, Mo. Thank you for coming, Mo. The issue with doing lots of things there, the second floor has the biggest room per se, but it's not ADA compliant. However, I checked with Stephanie and we can do things as long as we can make arrangements with letting people either have access or somehow getting upstairs. Steve says sometimes they just have two big guys who carry people up. Mm-hmm. We can make it work, but they've offered us a good deal. So if we wanted to have an event or something there, Steve is, you know, say we could get it at a really good price or something so that we could you know, do that kind of partnership in that way too. So he and, Ashley, who works with him, has said that we could, you know, do, you know, I was trying to do like Sundays at the park. And have like performers every Sunday for a couple weeks leading up to the festival. I couldn't get it together to do that, but that's an option. We can do Sundays in the park for the next one, build up the next one or something. But so if you can think, if you have those, again, we're looking for little, you know, little events with a guitar and a vocalist and, you know, $15, $20 for a poetry thing or something.
Sunday in the park with Miyuki.
Absolutely.
At the Josephine Butler Center after Sunday on the air. Okay.
Yeah.
The point is, I'm just saying it's very versatile and very,
I'll volunteer to help carry somebody upstairs in a wheelchair. Whatever it takes.
All right.
And our other facility, where Marvin had his debut, which we call the Riverside Center, is completely ADA.
Oh, you know, we need to go maybe next week. Where is it? Yeah.
And there are five stages in that hub of Marvin Gaye Park.
Where is
four outside and one.
Dennis is asking the address. Where is it?
Oh, it's next to H.D. Woodson. It's right on the west side of Woodson.
Okay.
Off of Division Avenue, Division and Foot.
All right.
And then we have a really cool 1 acre farm that's a half block away called the Marvin Gaye Greening Center that has this beautiful, like, learning pavilion in it, and was a huge resource during the pandemic when the mayor shut all the parks and the kids didn't have anywhere to go. That was their place. Okay. So we'd love to show it to you.
I'm taking notes, Miyuki.
Okay, cool. And you're recording this, even though, cause I don't see your pen in your hand, but I know you're recording.
Okay. Anybody else? I think we can actually wind down, because I'm just feeling good about all of this.
Thank you all so much. I appreciate you to come in and listening and asking questions.
Yeah, just a housekeeping note. We will not have the meeting 2 weeks from now on the third Wednesday. I'll be out of town. It's August. We can take a break. But we will stay connected and see how things develop.
Thank you all very, very much.
Everybody. Do I have a motion to adjourn?
I move that we adjourn.
Second.
Okay. So let it be so. Thank you all.
Good night.
Good night, everybody.
Good night.
Thank you,
sir.
Good night.